You're with SBS Radio.
I am Bertrand Tungandame and you're listening to NITV Radio. I'm in conversation with Dr. Amanpreet Kaur, a lecturer in accounting at the University of South Australia. In our conversation, we'll be looking at the findings of a new study recently released by the University of South Australia showing that less than 10% of mining companies in Australia have publicly stated their position and engagement with Aboriginal communities, including relationships in such crucial issues such as land rights and preservation of culturally significant sites. Firstly, mining companies work and operate and encroach on traditional owners' land, so they must have an interaction with the traditional owners on whose land and proximity they operate. Well, Professor Amanpreet, was it surprising that they did not have any publicly stated position on their engagement with the people on whose land they operate?
We were utterly surprised with the findings because we, based our study on the assumptions that mining companies share such a close relationship with Aboriginal communities. They have been working close to the Aboriginal communities on the traditional land, so they has to be some sort of disclosure in terms of, you know, how they are using expertise of traditional owners, how they are engaging with them, how they are supporting economic as well as social development where the mining companies operate. So when we came up with this finding, we were very shocked, very surprised, and we were thinking, why is the case? Like, why companies aren't reporting? So, yeah, it was very surprising to us.
So you look just at the disclosure statements, and because most companies have really, all of them have proclamations of good corporate social responsibility and all that, and yet this is not even put in writing.
Corporate social responsibility and sustainability reporting has been there now for decades, and companies are doing very well when it comes to reporting on climate change, on carbon emissions, on environmental reporting, and even employees, and in terms of how they are helping their local communities. And minings are huge. So you would think that the impact they create is also going to be very huge, and you would expect and anticipate some sort of exchange wherever the mining companies are. So it does really surprises us, like, although the companies have corporate social responsibility and sustainability reporting for such a long time, so why they haven't been able to capture such an important aspect of where they operate? So we were thinking probably the sustainability reporting frameworks have not yet captured the essence of this issue. So we did look at quite a different sort of frameworks, including the recently, in discussions as sustainable development goals. And, you know, it's surprisingly that not a lot of framework, unless the frameworks that are specifically for Indigenous people, do talk about these sort of issues.
Did you look at some geographic disparities, areas where there's a little bit more engagement than others, or it's just right across the nation?
We could not go into the geographical disparity. We would be very interested in the second phase of study to look at those things, because we were really overwhelmed with the data we had. And, you know, we started with looking at all the mining companies, skimming it down to the mining companies that operate only in Australia. And then, you know, that's how we, you know, based us or framed our study.
Is there any disparity between the mega giants, the big conglomerates like the Adanis and the Rio Tintos compared to smaller operations? Or
Definitely. The big visible corporations, companies definitely are reporting more extensively. We came across one of the annual sustainability report, actually, from Fosco. It was totally dedicated to the themes around Aboriginal culture, Aboriginal art, artifacts. That really surprised us. Like, you know, on one side, we were looking at companies that are not referring to Aboriginal communities and the relationship they have at all. And on the other side, there were companies who were reporting extensively on this issue, but disclosures were more by the larger companies in comparison to the smaller companies. This has been the case, you know, in the past as well, because larger companies have more resources to invest in, and then they can talk about the impact of, you know, their investments.
But again, it's the proclamations and the reality on the field, because every company has very glossy brochures that they publish at the end of the year for all the stakeholders. And then when you look at what they actually do, there is a very wide gap.
There have been so many studies that talk about, you know, greenwashing, and, you know, that reports, they are always, and that's what we all have found, like in my other studies, that a lot of companies, they would only reveal the positive news or the positive impact they create. A very few companies would really go into, you know, the negative consequences of their actions. Again, you know, if we have to think these reports are targeting investors. So if they are targeting investors, then, you know, they have to look good. They have to impress the investors or people from whom they want to raise money. So a lot of it, again, is related to impression management. In our study, we do, you know, towards the end, suggest that we need more field-based studies. In terms of, you know, having case studies, interviews, to understand what is working and what is not working. So that will give us a more, in a way, like a meaningful picture, a meaningful story of the relationship that exists.
What prompted you to do this study?
I and my colleague, we are in sustainability accounting and reporting area. And for a long time, like, we were looking holistically at sustainability report. As we were researching, we were finding that social issues have not been researched to an extent they should be, although they are equally important. So, and then, you know, there were so much, you know, media attention around issues in relation to Aboriginal communities and mining in Australia. So these things really inspired us to think, like, you know, why there are limited studies that talk about such an important issue in the Australian context, given that there has been a long history of, you know, mining companies operating in localities or, you know, lands that are either on or close to Aboriginal communities. And there are so many conflict stories. So we thought, like, oh, it's an interesting thing, but we do not know anything about what companies are doing in terms of, you know, either contributing or in a way, like, how they see this relationship. And we were also interested, like, some of the studies that I went through emphasized the idea that Australian Aboriginal community have expertise and knowledge that is thousands of years old, and mining companies can really, you know, gain huge benefit from those sort of expertise and knowledge. So we really wanted to see, like, how is it playing? So that really encouraged us to go and look into, you know, this particular social issue that is so relevant in the Australian context.
And you also uncovered that there are some existing programs that aim to increase Aboriginal employment and involvement in the industry. Are they working, or the reality on the field could be different?
We did find quite a power difference when we were reading the narratives. It was so interesting to read how they are writing the story around how they are contributing to economic and social development of Aboriginal communities. A lot of it was like, we are on the giving side, like, we are doing this for the Aboriginal communities. We are making sure, you know, we are looking after that. We are creating employment opportunities. And a lot of companies were giving the trend in terms of how the employment has increased, and they were giving their targets to which they would like the employment to increase. But the thing that we found surprising, that there was very limited, only a couple of companies probably, who really said or emphasize the importance of contribution that Aboriginal communities or people can make in the form of leadership roles. So we did find very little. We found very little evidence of Aboriginal people being on leadership positions. So that does tell a bit of story. So yeah, they are promoting employment. They are giving training. They are investing in health, but we do not have positions or very few positions that will give Aboriginal people the power to make the difference and, you know, make a difference because these are the positions that will give them the voice that will impact the decision and then probably create a real change.
All is not gloom. I believe you also found some positive stories and positive aspects in how corporations deal with First Nations people.
We framed our study around the five dimensions as suggested by reconciliation, including race relations, institutional integrity, historical acceptance. So what we found are companies were doing very good when it came to institutional spending, that in terms of institutional integrity. Again, you know, the motivations could go back to, you know, what is important to them. But we did not find enough evidence of how they are promoting unity or managing race relation within the organization. Only few companies talked about cultural awareness training programs, and only few companies talk about how they celebrate Aboriginal cultural events. So we thought like, yeah, it's good. They are investing. They are taking care of communities. But what about these issues that are very specific to Aboriginal communities, like their culture, their like their values, like their beliefs? It's so important for an organization to make sure that everyone within that organization is aware and respects the values that are very specific to this community.
And who are the big culprits?
I would include companies like Newcrest, Rio Tinto, BHP Billiton. In a way, like, you know, these companies are the ones that are among the top in terms of market capitalization in Australian Stock Exchange. So these are the big giant companies that are reporting.
They have all these issues. Resources, and also because we hear stories of when they say they create employment, sometimes it's fly-in, fly-out. So let's say a mining company in Western Australia could have workers all flown in from New South Wales or Queensland. So the impact on the local employment would be limited, or just limited to the most the degrading, demeaning jobs and nothing really meaningful to the community. And so that's another
yes. Yes, that's exactly what our research is suggesting, that we really would like to see things changing in terms of how they are able to create meaningful jobs, give them better sense of or feeling of inclusivity and better diversity. That's what we would, you know, like to see in the coming. And that's the message we are sharing through this research.
What would be your other recommendations to both, to because there's so many stakeholders, to government, to corporations, and to the communities, because it's not a one-sided approach. All the parties involved have to take a step to improve this situation.
I think from corporations, companies' point of view, they need to create meaningful engagement that walks the talk in the form of partnerships, joint ventures that will enable Aboriginal communities to maximize economic benefits and minimize their social, cultural, and environmental costs. So creating more leadership roles is important from companies' point of view. Along with this, you know, having better accountability mechanisms that will enable companies to track their performance both in qualitative and quantitative measures, so that they can reflect on what went well, what didn't went well, and then, you know, create a report that will give a balanced picture of company's performance in relation to this particular matter. From government's point of view, our study observed that, you know, that government or legislation do have significant influence on what companies do, because we did find that the highest disclosure made by the companies was in the form of were related to land use agreements or native title agreements. So they were acknowledging this thing because they want government to know that they are doing the right things. You know, government has huge and is a powerful stakeholder, where Aboriginal communities are more like a marginalized stakeholder. So government is more powerful and has that capacity to influence the way corporations respond to this issue. So they can, you know, governments can bring in more regulations and endorse initiative like reconciliation action plans, where, you know, corporations, companies, Aboriginal communities and non-Aboriginal communities come together on a common platform and decide and discuss and, you know, probably visualize how it will be and create strategies and policies around how they can make this relationship better, and on the broader scale, how they can advance and foster reconciliation in the reconciliation process in Australia.
When I look at some of the dysfunctioning aspects of this relationship, I can think of the Juukan Gorge, destruction of the Juukan Gorge sites, and then the fight between Adani and the traditional owners, whereby actually the government was even changing laws or siding with the corporations because the economic impact was more supposedly the economic and the employment impact was more important than other aspects that the traditional owners were bringing forward, and can have very conflicting interests interacting in there.
I agree with you. Like, eventually, corporations have to realize they are huge. They have the resources to make the change. And many companies worldwide, they have acted as leader. They have shown that by it's with their actions, things change. So if companies can, you know, address environmental issues, climate change issues, invest in them, take them seriously, there is a potential that they can change the game. And again, companies probably haven't yet realized and are not aware of the benefits Aboriginal communities can bring into their knowledge and expertise in local environmental management. Is something that they can use and capitalize to avoid environmental implications. So I think we need to really change the way, in terms of companies, need to change the way how they think this relationship works. They need to think in this in more a win-win scenario. How if they establish a mining in a particular zone, it not only benefits them, it also benefits the communities that live in that area, because there is potential of having such win-win situation.
Well, Dr. Amanpreet Kaur, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.